Good morning, and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning, right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at wliw.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. Each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed on my podcast via Audio Boom and iTunes. Well, in this morning's sports interview show, I'll visit with a golf instructor whose longtime student is emerging as a PGA Tour star. I'll talk with a five-time World Series champion who wishes he would have taken up golf during his Major League Baseball pitching career. And we'll visit with a golf insider who's loaded with opinions on many issues in the game. We'll start with Jason Birnbaum, who is the Director of Instruction at Manhattan Woods in Nyack, New York. He's a Golf Magazine Top 100 teacher in addition to a Golf Digest Best In-State teacher in New York. And he has coached Chris Goddard since Chris was 14 years old. Now, Chris had a stellar amateur career in golf, but has recently emerged in the public eye when he won the Genesis Scottish Open in July. And followed that up a week later with a third-place finish at the Open Championship at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland. Jason Birnbaum, his coach, will share their journey. David Cone, winner of five World Series and baseball analyst for ESPN and YES Network, he talks about his passion for golf and the similarities between the pitching motion and the golf swing. And Dan Rappaport, golf insider for Scratch, and host of Dan on Golf, he and I tackle some top stories in the game from the FedEx Cup playoff format to the upcoming U.S. Ryder Cup team selection. Hope you enjoy this edition of Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. Jason Birnbaum, Director of Instruction at Manhattan Woods Golf Club in West Nyack, New York. He's been working with PGA Tour star Chris Goddard since Chris was 14 years old, and Chris has had amazing results in the last couple months, most notably winning the Genesis Scottish Open on Sunday, July 13th, and then a week later finishing in solo third place at the Open Championship at Royal Portrush.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you for having me.
Hey, congrats on all of Chris's success. I'm sure you work with a ton of different people, but let's start from the beginning. Tell us how you first connected with Chris and what has your working relationship been like through the years?
Sure, yeah, it was great. Chris's dad, Morton, found me quite a while ago. Chris was probably around 14, and, you know, they signed up for a lesson. I didn't know who Chris was or know much about him, and, you know, he was just another person on the schedule that day. I was teaching at Alpine Country Club back then, and it was actually in the winter time, which was interesting because I was teaching indoors on a golf simulator, and this kid walks in and starts ripping shots into the simulator, and you know, obviously it's simulation, so you can't really, you know, get an accurate depiction of what's happening. But the technology back then was decent enough to, you know, I could see this kid was had a lot of speed and lots of power. And, you know, he was really a raw talent and he was bombing it. So I was kind of excited to see where that could go. And yeah, it led to a 14 years later, a Scottish Open win. So it was pretty cool. But when we first started, it's interesting. It was actually a blessing getting to work with him indoors to start, because when you're indoors, you really just can't focus on much other than the golf swing, right? There's no short game. You can't see the ball flight. You're not playing a golf course. So it really gave us an opportunity to just get into sort of the nuts and bolts of the swing and not worry too much about where the ball was going. And being able to get off to a start like that with a talented player for the first few months was really pretty cool. And actually, to be honest with you, I've done that with some students over the years where I've actually started with them indoors, because it's just, you know, seeing my experience with Chris and how much more productive it was to start in that environment gave me that idea. But yeah, it's been great to watch, you know, how good he's gotten over the years. But starting indoors like that back then was pretty cool.
That must have been such a cool experience. In the middle of winter, you're saying, and here comes this kid who's just bombing the ball. Did he have any fundamentals at that point?
Yeah, I mean, he was just kind of all over the place. He would shoot, you know, good scores in the low 70s, and he would shoot scores, you know, in the high 80s. So there was a big range. He probably at that point wasn't, you know, 100% dedicated and focused on golf. He was playing lacrosse at that time, which I think really helped him from a speed and power standpoint when it comes to golf. And, yeah, I mean, you know, things like the driver, for example, like you could see how much speed and power there was, but, you know, it was hard for him to control the driver. And then, you know, finesse parts of the game, like chipping and wedge play were areas that needed, you know, a lot of attention. So we got into it. We started working on really all areas, and we had that couple month head start until we, you know, got outside that spring and, you know, I was actually able to see his ball flight. But yeah, it was pretty fascinating.
That is so fascinating for sure. And I know people in golf know of Chris, and particularly in New Jersey, his father won several New Jersey State Golf Association tournaments, right?
That's correct. Yep. He's a great player. Yep.
So, I mean, I read where Chris played varsity golf at Christian Brothers Academy and then at Rutgers from 2017 to 2021. Then he transferred to University of Oklahoma. And obviously, when he transferred, you guys stayed connected, right?
Correct. Yeah, we did. So, you know, he wasn't, you know, he didn't have an amazing junior golf career. So there weren't a ton of colleges that were really interested, and Rutgers was. Coach Schutte there did a great job recruiting him, and putting him in that sort of team environment at Rutgers was really big for him. You know, being on having a little bit more structure to his schedule, getting into the gym, playing great golf courses that we have here in the Northeast, and he really started to become a more well-rounded player. Chris has talked quite a bit about the amount of weight that he lost his sophomore year. Chris lost like probably 40 pounds around his sophomore year of college, and that really sort of just catapulted him. He started to swing the club better. He started to play at another level sort of that summer of sophomore year. He dominated, you know, golf in the Met area in that summer of sophomore year, and he really sort of took off. And his next couple of years at Rutgers were outstanding. And then, you know, he got a lucky break with the COVID year, so he got an extra year of eligibility, and he transferred to Oklahoma, and that took him to just another whole new level. Oklahoma was number one team in the country, and Coach Hibble has an amazing program there, and you know, it's very windy in Oklahoma. The ground is firm. It's a different level of competition. So he, you know, learning to play in the wind there, that was actually, you know, really big for him. And he just became, you know, he took his ball striking really to another level. Chris actually commented after he won the Scottish that it was, you know, it was kind of like playing golf in Oklahoma, just with the way the wind was and the ground and how he had to shape shots and things like that. But yeah, we kept in touch. Obviously, when he was at Rutgers, you know, I saw him quite a bit because he was in New Jersey. And Oklahoma, I made a trip out to Oklahoma once or twice to see him, and he came home enough over the holidays, and you know, we would do virtual lessons throughout that time. And Chris is he's always been sort of a what's the right word? You know, he's not very needy in terms of when it comes to, you know, needing help all the time. So when Chris is in a groove and he's got things going, I mean, he can really, you know, he's not high maintenance when it comes to needing a lot of work. So, you know, there would be times where we didn't talk for a couple weeks and, you know, he'd shoot me a text and says, it feels great. You know, this is what I got going. He sent me a video. I say, it looks great. You know, love the thought, you know, and then you may not hear from him for a couple weeks. So that's kind of how it was back in college, and he was the number one player in the country on the number one team in the country, and that gave him a lot of confidence coming out of school.
And I love the fact that he learned how to play in the wind in Oklahoma. That is just so crucial.
Yeah, that was big.
And obviously helped him in Scotland and in Northern Ireland. And he won, by the way, two of the biggest awards that a college golfer can win when he was at Oklahoma, the Haskins Award and the Jack Nicklaus Award. So
yes,
people in golf were really seeing him emerge. And so tell me, what was going through your mind when you saw Chris win the Scottish? Not only win it, but outplaying Rory McIlroy head-to-head in the final round.
Cool. Yeah, amazing. I mean, that was just the best of the best. I mean, he just doesn't get better than that. It was, you know, to do it over there and to do it in those conditions, it was just such a, like a beautiful weekend out there, and to do it against, you know, one of the best players in the world and sort of a hometown hero in Rory was special. You know, I knew Yeah, we're both of us. I mean, we everyone on his team. Chris has got a great team around him, and everyone, you know, sort of knows what he's capable of. And, you know, until he does it, you know, obviously there's always going to be a little doubt in people's minds. But I thought he'd play well that day. You know, a lot of people were asking me on Saturday night before the Scottish final round, you know, can Chris handle this pairing? How's he going to deal with this pressure? And that never really crossed my mind that he would have a difficult time handling the pressure. He's got a bit of a fearless to him that has, you know, served him well. And I didn't think that would get to him. He'd played in big moments like that before. He had already won on tour, and, you know, he finished, you know, fourth place at the John Deere when he had, you know, really just gotten out of college, which was a big deal, winning those top awards. So, yeah, I thought he was prepared for it, and I wasn't really surprised, to be honest. I thought he could do it, and I was happy to see him get it done.
So what do you think is the biggest difference in Chris's game in, say, the last couple months?
Yeah, I would say just overall consistency. All areas of his game have gotten a little bit better. I would say the driver, though, is number one. You know, Chris has lots of club head speed. He hits the ball really far. He's one of the longest hitters, really, in the world. And when
What's
he's driving
it, now off the tee?
His club speed average is probably around 127 miles an hour, and Chris is flying at about 330 on a normal one. And, you know, when it's firm and fast conditions on tour, you know, 330, 335 in the air is going to go, it's going to be go over 350. It's going to go 350
crazy.
To 360, which is a lot. So when he's hitting the fairway, you know, he's going to have lots of wedges in his hands, and over an 18 hole period, he's going to be tough to beat. And when he's not hitting the fairway, he's hitting it so far that he's just much closer to the green, and he's a strong kid. So, you know, playing from the rough is not something that he's afraid to do. But I would say over the last few months, he's driven the ball really well. He had struggled with the driver late last year and early this year. But the driver has gotten much, much more consistent. And his short game has also been at another level these last couple weeks. Especially the events he played in Scotland and Northern Ireland. His chipping and putting were great. He had really putted pretty solid most of the year, but just not making enough. And they've just, these last couple weeks, they've really just, the putts have started to drop, and that's what it's all about. And now he's got lots of confidence, and confidence in golf is a dangerous thing for guys at that level.
Sure. I mean, do you think he thinks he's caught lightning in a bottle, or do you think this is going to be somewhat the norm for Chris Gutterup?
No. I think that this would be somewhat the norm. I mean, he's really been trending. He's had lots of consistency, really, the last 3 months. He's finished between 12th and 28th place in almost every event he's played, and he's made something like 11 out of 12 of the last cuts, and the one cut he missed up in Canada was just by one shot. So there's just, he's really just been trending in the right direction for a while now. This is not, you know, just been a 2 week thing. The only difference is he's putted well these last 2 weeks, and, you know, putting is not something that's easy to always be, you know, they're not always going to fall for you, but I would not call this lightning in a bottle. I think Chris has shown that he's been much more consistent, and he also has the game and the power to keep this going.
So he's currently number 20 in the Ryder Cup rankings, which is higher than Jordan Spieth, higher than Billy Horschel, higher than Max Grazerman, Ryan Gerard, Jake Knapp, Max Homa, Ricky Fowler. What have you talked to him about that? What are his thoughts about that?
You know, we haven't really. I think it's only kind of been on his radar more of late. I've mentioned even after winning in Scotland, I don't think that really was on his mind. After he played well at Port Rush, I think, you know, obviously that started to be a hot topic of conversation, and you know, Chris is, you know, certainly hears it. So it's on his mind now, and let's see. I mean, he knows he's got work to do. You know, everyone's saying if it was tomorrow, he would be on the team, but it's not tomorrow. So we've got to, it's like, you know, he's got certain goals. I think for right now, he really wants to get to the Tour Championship. He's a lock for these next two playoff events. And, you know, he's pretty close to getting into the Tour Championship. So first and foremost, we want to get to that last week of the year and give himself a good chance at the final. But yeah, he's right in the mix, and I think he's up for it. He's been up to the challenge quite a bit this year. So let's see if he can get it done. I think he's got to play consistent golf here in the playoffs, and I think that he will.
Well, I mean, somewhat overnight, two maybe the general golf public, he has become a big star because of his play at the Scottish and the Open. I mean, you've known his abilities for years now, but how is he dealing with this increase in attention and, you know, all the distractions that come with, you know, winning like that?
Yeah, he's been great. I was with Chris in Minnesota the week after the Open Championship, and it was definitely, that's probably the maybe 12th or 13th event that I've been to with Chris this year. And you could tell the difference in Minnesota. I mean, there's a little bit of a different level of respect from the other players. There is, you know, more players coming over to say hello to him and congratulate him and talk to him. And the reaction from the fans was totally different in Minnesota, the autograph requests, the interview requests. And I'll tell you, he hasn't skipped a beat. I mean, he has been just this usual Chris got her up. He hasn't changed a thing. His demeanor out there was fantastic. The way that he's handled the whole situation has been great. And, you know, he's kind of a low-key guy, and he's been really good. He hasn't changed much. He's got a really, really good team around him, and I think, you know, the support there has definitely been helpful. And, yeah, he's just kind of enjoying the moment right now and the opportunities that he's got in front of him really these next couple months.
Real quick, last question. Wyndham Championship, Cameron Young, another Met area professional. He'll take that five-shot lead into the final round today, Jason. He's been a runner-up 7 times. No wins to date on the PGA Tour yet. What would you say to Cameron?
Yeah, I mean, just keep doing what you're doing, right? I've seen Cameron out there almost every week I've gone out. Kid's working hard. You know, his dad's been with him every step of the way, and they're always grinding on the range, and you know, he's right there. So, you know, don't change a thing, and, you know, be confident and keep doing what you're doing, because he's certainly been in command this week. He's a great player. I mean, he's one of the best players in the world, especially when he's on his game. And like we've talked about with Chris, there's so much confidence involved. These guys are all, you know, all great players to get to that level. And it's just a matter of, you know, feeling good and being in the right frame of mind and seeing some putts go in. And that's what he's done this week. And I think he'll play really solid today.
Jason, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for your insight and continued success.
You got it. Thanks for having me on, Anna. I appreciate it. Have a great, great day.
And you know, there's always so much golf news to digest. And here to offer his insight on some of the top issues in the game is Golf Insider Dan Rappaport. Now, Dan is a Golf Insider for Scratch and host of Dan on Golf. Dan?
Thank you. Yeah, we've been, I feel like we've been going back and forth trying to figure out the right time to do this. So I'm stoked to do it now. Obviously, the major season's in the rearview mirror, but still a lot of golf left this year. So I'm excited.
Yeah, and I love your work. Really been a big fan of your work through the years. And, well, since the FedEx St. Jude is in progress, final round this afternoon, and the first of 3 tournaments in the FedEx Cup format, let's just talk about that. You know, I'm so glad they eliminated the starting strokes format. I just thought that was so ridiculous. And so I couldn't stand it. And now the top 30 who reach each East Lake start at even. And the winner is then crowned the FedEx Cup champ. But what are your thoughts about the overall format and the little change there?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it stems back to this sort of macro problem that the PGA Tour has, which is there are 5 events that stand alone as far as importance and significance in our game. And the PGA Tour doesn't own any of them, right? It's the 4 majors and the Ryder Cup. And so they started this FedEx Cup in 2007 for 2 reasons, right? You know, you want to have a season-long race, you could pump some more money in, but also they wanted something to big that felt like their own, and it just hasn't quite worked. If you look at the Players' Championship, I feel like the Players' Championship has more importance now than ever before. You know, I think TPC Sawgrass is an iconic venue, and I think, you know, it being right before the Masters, I think they've done a great job with the Players, but the playoffs haven't. They just haven't. I think last year reached a little bit of a low point when you had just this drama-less final round where Colin Morikawa was winning the actual golf tournament, but Scottie Scheffler was way ahead in the, you know, sort of the net division, and it needed a change. And you know, I never thought that the tour players or the tour itself would agree to the change that they've made with the Tour Championship. I just, you know, because we've talked about this a lot in golf. How can they change the FedEx Cup? How can they change the FedEx Cup? I never thought they would agree to a proper finals, a proper playoff format where you get to the finals and then everything wipes clean. Because there's always been this talk about, oh, well, you know, if Scottie Scheffler has been the best player of the whole year, it's not fair if he doesn't win the FedEx. Well, that doesn't really hold up in other sports, right? We don't say, oh, unless the Lakers are in the NBA finals, you know, the NBA is going to die. It's like that's sports. And the regular season is one thing and the playoffs is another. So I think this is a step in the right direction. I actually think they should go even further. I think the FedEx Cup should just be the regular season and it should just wipe clean before the playoffs. Top 50 in the leaderboard after this week, move on to BMW. Top 30, move on to Eastlake, and then we play straight up. I think that would add a lot of intrigue. There'd be a lot more drama, I think, in these first two playoff events about trying to get to that number, and there still is now, but it's so hard to follow. I mean, I was watching even last week in Greensboro, and they're trying to update you on what Mark Hubbard needs and Matty Schmidt needs, and it's just, if this guy makes a bogey, and that goes from a three-way T2 to a two-way T4, and it's just too much going on. I think they need to simplify it. I think they need to get out of Memphis and Baltimore as the first two. I think there's so many other places around the country, and I think this is one of the things that Brian Rolapp, the new PGA Tour CEO, and Strategic Sports Group, which is this, you know, consortium of American billionaires that have a seat at the table now at the PGA Tour, you know, if they're looking at this with fresh eyes, you imagine they're in a boardroom, right? And you're thinking, okay, we got three events in August. We're going to go to LA. No, we're going to go to New York. New York crowds are always great. No, we're going to go to Chicago, right? BMW. No, we're going to do Memphis and Baltimore. we're leaving stuff out there. And I understand that, you know, FedEx is based in Memphis and Coca-Cola is in Atlanta. And, you know, it's not as simple as let's put the tournaments here, there, or there. But I would expect these playoffs to change pretty significantly with new leadership.
Right. And don't even go into the money payout. That is so freaking confusing that I don't even think people really care because these guys are making so much money as it is. So we're not even.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
the one thing I'll add to that is like, yeah. Have you ever watched a football game and someone's like, oh, you know, Patrick Mahomes is making $47 million. Just no one cares. Right. It's not what the fans watch. It actually even turns them off a little bit, I think.
Right. But I think some people do care that Rory McIlroy is not playing in Memphis. He skipped the first tournament of this playoff format. I'm sure the PGA Tour is upset, as is Federal Express. What are your thoughts about it?
They're definitely upset. But listen, you know, I think Rory learned a really tough lesson a couple of years ago. And I think that lesson was, you know, I put myself out there. I was basically the spokesman, the conscience of the PGA Tour for 2 years. And I took all of this heat and I stood up in front of these microphones and I talked about legacy and loyalty. And when it was time to make a deal, I was not in the room. And I think Rory learned a lesson there, which is I got to take care of number one and I got to take care of Rory McIlroy. And I don't think that he would have done this if he didn't win the Masters, because, you know, if he has another season where he doesn't win a major, wanting to win the FedEx Cup, you know, a fourth FedEx Cup is another, you know, kind of bullet point on his resume that he'd want to add. But now I think we've seen he had this little swoon after the Masters where he was kind of in a weird mood. Don't really know what was going on, but I think he really got back to normal when he went over back to home to the Northern Ireland for the Open Championship, finished in the top 10 there. And then I saw some videos of him partying on a yacht. And that's kind of what we wanted to see from Rory, right? Like you won the Masters, you did it, right? Like enjoy your life. And I think, look, you can't ignore the fact that he finished basically dead last year. Memphis, you know, I am at home. I have a very strict no Memphis in August policy. It is just way too hot from what I gather. And he probably looked at the numbers and said, the most I can fall is like three or four spots. I'm going to get to Eastlake no matter what happens. So would I rather stay in Europe where it's really nice in August for another week, or would I rather come back to Memphis? And look, it's not an epidemic. He's literally the only one who skipped this week, right? At 69 of the top 70. But I completely understand it from Rory McIlroy's perspective, and I understand the PGA Tour being not so happy about it. So, and I think that's another potential benefit of the format that I proposed is you wouldn't be able to skip. You wouldn't move on. So I get it from Rory's perspective. I get it from the PGA Tour's perspective. I know in this culture, we really want everyone to take one side and feel really strong, but I just kind of understand it on both sides.
I do too. And, you know, Rory, but, you know, Scottie Scheffler is there. Talking about somebody who doesn't have to be there, Scheffler is playing. So,
but I think it's been a fascinating dichotomy of watching those two and how they react to winning major championships, right? Obviously, Scottie doesn't have the scar tissue that Rory has. Scottie won, you know, the PGA, and as he said very, very famously in his press conference, it lasted about 2 minutes, and then he was on to the next. You know, he won the Open Championship. you know, if Rory won the Open Championship at home at Port Rush, you would have seen him in the Harbor Bar until 2 a.m. You know, Scotty, I think, probably went home to have a Diet Coke and watch Netflix. So I just don't think that Scotty rides the emotional right. roller coaster that Rory does.
It is who it is. They are who they are, for sure.
That's right.
And speaking of the two, they're just, to me, they're really interesting studies. You might, you know, I never thought Scotty Scheffler was boring like a lot of people do, because I just think he's such an interesting study. And to your point, his comments at the Open Championship were just so interesting, but that's who he is. And you termed it in one of your pieces for Scratch, complicated emotions Scotty has about golf that he shared in that press conference. What were your thoughts when you heard Scotty talk about all of this?
Yeah, it was certainly jarring. He certainly didn't need to go there. I was in the room, and it was a pretty straightforward question, you know? And I actually think, like, he was asked a similar question on Saturday night when he had the lead, and it was a very different answer. It was, you know, I'm going to go out there and try to birdie the first hole, and you know, I enjoy competing. I almost think he found a catharsis in it. I almost think it was like a little therapy session for him out there. You know, one of the benefits of therapy is, like, you have these complicated emotions in your head, and then they're just sort of sitting there, and they're looming there, and they can become this sort of boogeyman. Whereas if you just talk it out, I think sometimes that just feels better. And it's not like Scotty came to some, you know, conclusion or thesis that changed his life. But I think just the act of talking it out made him feel a little bit better. One thing I will say about Scotty, you know, we saw Tiger Woods inspire a generation of golfers to get in the gym. I think we're going to see Scotty Scheffler inspire a lot of golfers to get in church. I really do believe that. I mean, some of the younger players that are coming up now, like a Luke Clanton, like a David Ford, who just won PGA Tour U, faith is a huge part of their diet. It's a huge part of who they are. And, you know, I think there's this organization called the College Golf Fellowship, which, you know, seeks to bring college players closer to God. And I think it's going to become increasingly popular because these guys are seeing a player who has reached a level that we have not seen since Tiger Woods, but he's got this sort of work-life balance that seems to be the envy of all of his peers. I remember when I was over there for the Open, and Justin Rose was talking about it almost with a little bit of envy. Like, this guy has these two tent poles in his life. He's got his faith and he's got his family, and those keep him so grounded that this golf thing is just a profession for him. And, you know, or if you contrast that with Rory, he wears his heart on his sleeve, right? Every tournament is so incredibly emotional. I think there's something to be said for just sort of not getting too high and not getting too low. And I think, you know, the reason he's able to do that is because of his faith and his family.
I agree. He's such an incredible role model, Scotty Scheffler, and he has figured it out. He really has a great balance in his life, and he's put everything in perspective, and he's shared it with the world. All right, let's move on to the Ryder Cup. Boy, this will be fun to see what Keegan Bradley is going to do, not only with his captain's picks, but with himself, right? So you have Scotty Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, J.J. Spahn, Russell Henley, Bryson DeChambeau, Harris English as the top six right now, right? Scotty's in mathematically. JT, yes. Colin Morikawa, I don't think so. I would say no at this point. Ben Griffin, yes, in my opinion. Keegan, I would say yes. I know how difficult it will be to be a captain and a player. I can only, you know, guess how difficult it will be. I can presume how difficult it will be. But I just think he can do it. If anybody can juggle that, I think he'll do it. And it'll add so much intrigue to this Ryder Cup.
Well, it's already going to be the biggest Ryder Cup, certainly in my lifetime, just being at Bethpage Black and being in New York. You know, the media attention is going to be the on-site experience is going to be next level. I saw some photos that came out a couple of weeks ago. They basically built a city around the first and the 18th hole at Bethpage. It almost looks like they moved the tee to the left to move the tee closer to that 18th green so that there's even more of a stadium feel. I think he's going to play. I saw, you know, I keep in touch with Keegan. I've seen a shift since he won the Travelers. I really have. You know, I think before he won the I think he was never going to pick himself unless he won and unless he finished in the top 12 at least in the points, and he did both of those things. And before it was, you know, there's so much here. I'm gonna you know, I don't know if I can juggle it, and you know, I'm focused on being the captain. Now it's, you know, actually the PGA of America said to me when they gave me the captaincy that they wanted me to be a playing captain. And you know, now that I have all these assistant captains, you know, I'm starting to think of a world where, okay, maybe this is actually possible. And I think with Keegan's, the way he's played this year, but also just the character that he is, I think those other guys that you mentioned, the guys who are locks to make the team, the Scotties, the Xanders, the JTs, the Brysons, I think they're going to say, dude, we want you to play. We feel like you can add more. And this is another sort of dirty little secret about Ryder Cup captaincy. I think, I don't know how much it honestly matters. They don't hit a shot. The most important thing that they can do is with their picks. But, you know, everyone said that Steve Stricker was this incredible captain. That's because they won by a lot. And, you know, everyone, you know, Jim Furyk, when he lost his Ryder Cup captaincy, you know, everyone was hammering. It's because the players didn't play well. You know, it's still the players that hit the shots. And I do think he's going to play. And I think you're 100% right. I think it's going to add just another layer to a Ryder Cup that's really already on steroids.
Oh, it's going to be amazing here in New York. I mean, everybody is so pumped. But I think Keegan, you know, he is multifaceted. I think he can do it. Not everybody can do it. A lot of people are just more one-dimensional and linear, right? But Keegan seems to, you know, have a lot of talents that we're just really discovering on, you know, beyond golf, right? A leadership talent.
Well, I think. And I think also, like, the fact that he's been able to play this well with this Ryder Cup captaincy looming already, I think shows an ability to compartmentalize that's going to be, you know, super important. You look at, you know, he's definitely a lot younger, but I mean, Luke Donald isn't playing at the level that Keegan Bradley, you know, a lot of these guys, when they take this Ryder Cup captaincy, it takes over their life. And, you know, it's really, really difficult to juggle both. And Keegan, you know, when he got the captaincy, it was before he won the BMW. So he wasn't even necessarily going to be in all of the signature events and everything for the following year. He gets the captaincy and then goes on this run. And I think that's proven a lot to himself and to everybody else.
All right. I think Cameron Young should definitely be on that team, having played and grown up near Sleepy Hollow in Westchester. I do not want Wyndham Clark to be on the team. I just am so opposed to his behavior at Oakmont. I can't get over that, Dan. I really can't. And I just think he shouldn't play for the U.S. I'm just so upset at his behavior. And I just don't think he made really the proper apology. Even if he did apology, I don't think he deserves a spot based on his behavior and his anger management. He can't deal with it.
I think the apology is what angered the Oakmont membership and the golf community even more so than what he did. So when it first happened, you know, I said immediately, we're either going to get a denial or an apology really, really quickly, right? Because if it's not true, you go out and say, this is not true. If it is true, you better apologize. And I think also, if we look to the major before that, the PGA Championship, he had another outburst where he flung his driver backwards into a sign, but it was a T-Mobile sign and T-Mobile's on his hat. And so you got this heartfelt apology, you know, the notes app on the Instagram page. I'm looking to be better. And then he does what he does at Oakmont and doesn't apologize until he shot like 6 under in the first round of the Travelers and then has to do it in a media interview. And then also, you know, saying, oh, I want to move on for Oakmont's sake.
Yeah, right. Like he's telling us to move on, you know, he's telling us that we need to move on.
Right. It's like, I liken it to, like, you know, someone, you know, a buddy comes over and he takes your last sparkling water. Right. And you're mad at him for taking the sparkling water. But if he just kind of apologizes and like, man, I was thirsty, I'm sorry. But if he comes up to you 3 days later and he's like, I don't know what you want me to say, I want to move on. You're like, well, now I'm not even really mad about you taking the sparkling water. You're just being an ass, you know? So I think the apology went the wrong way.
It did. Now, Chris Gutterup, I'd love to see him, you know, raised in New Jersey and went to Rutgers. I'd love to see him on that team as well.
Yeah, I think he's got to have a strong playoffs. You know, there's always a player who kind of gets hot at the end. What an amazing 2 weeks, really a career changing 2 weeks that he had over in Scotland and Northern Ireland, you know, winning the Scottish and then playing as well as he did. I think they want him to be on that team too, but I think he's got to show it. He's got to continue to play well because he doesn't have the pedigree of a, you know, if it comes down to Chris Gotterup versus Colin Morikawa and Gotterup's coming in off a T35 and a T40, you know, Colin's a little bit more of a sure bet. So I think he's got some work to do, as does Cameron Young. But it's fun to see, you know, two tri-state guys are pushing at the right time.
That's right. And how about Patrick Cantlay? He hasn't really done much, Dan. I don't think he deserves to be on the team this year, as much as, you know, he's had that Ryder Cup experience.
I go both ways, because on one hand, he was so pathetic in the majors this year. I mean, he finished 36th in the Masters, which making the cut at the Masters, I mean, missing the cut at the Masters is like is embarrassing. I mean, there's like 85 players in the field. You got seven past champions who, you know, don't play on the PGA Tour at all. And you've got like five amateurs. So you really have to beat like 10 other players. So finishing T36 in the Masters is not like finishing T36 in the US Open. And then he misses the cut in the next three. So does he deserve it with his play this year? Absolutely not. But he was one of the bright spots in Italy. The hat situation, it breathed life into the American team. And he was also, he was maybe the best player for the Americans in Montreal in the President's Cup. So
good point.
It's a tough decision. He's a different player in PGA Tour events than he is in majors. And he's actually shown in the last two team competitions. And also Xander Schauffele loves him, and Xander Schauffele is going to be on that team. And they've been a really strong pairing that the U.S. can trot out there and not really think twice. So I agree with you. He wouldn't be on my team. I do still think he'll probably nab one of those last two spots.
Plus, we love Joe LaCava. So yeah. And we want to see Joe there.
Anytime, yeah.
Connecticut
let's get
guy.
Joe and Rory, you know, let's get Joe and Rory on the first tee on Sunday in singles and watch that crowd wave their hats all over to us.
The David Cohn Celebrity Charity Golf Classic benefiting the Ed Lucas Foundation. And David is my guest. First time on Talking Golf with me, David. Welcome to Talking Golf.
Finally, all these years we've known each other, and I've seen you at all these events over the years, and I'm happy to come on.
And of course, I've covered your baseball career years ago, and now you are the baseball analyst for ESPN Sunday Night and for YES Network. And I want to talk golf with you because baseball players make pretty good golfers, some very, very good golfers. How about you? How would you describe your game?
I'm a left-handed swinger, and I didn't pick up the game till I retired for baseball. So it's been a challenge, but I love it. Got the bug. Broke 80 a couple of times, kind of reached that goal of breaking 80, and then I've fallen back a little bit. I had a hip replacement surgery, but I'm back into it again, and I just love it.
What's your handicap these days?
I'm probably around a 12.
Okay.
Not too bad. You know, I mean, I'm mid-80s. I used to shoot in the mid-80s, so.
That's pretty good. And you live in Florida, and obviously during baseball season you're very, very busy. But can you play mostly in the wintertime?
I can. Yeah, you know, I live on a course down in Florida in the Boca region, and it's great. You know, I live on this in a community where Bernhard Langer lives.
Oh, I love Bernhard.
And he's been great. I meet him on the range, just watching him, the way he swings, it's just amazing. So, I'm more at the range now, you know, working on my game than I am actually playing.
Has Bernhard given you any tips? Because that guy is just amazing.
Yeah, no, he's great. He's very generous with everything, and tempo and rhythm and his repeatable swing. Just he's automatic.
Imagine for his age, he has to be mid-60s now, and he's just he goes out there and thinks win all the time on the senior tour.
He's in fantastic shape. You know, he keeps himself in amazing shape even through some of the injuries he's had, you know, Achilles injury that he had, you know, over the last couple of years, but he bounced right back, and he looks as good as ever.
Now, rumor has it that he got that Achilles injury on the pickleball court, but anyway, he's definitely bounced back from that. Now, David, I know you batted lefty, right, and threw righty. So years ago, when Yogi Berra was still around, he hit his tee shots righty and putt lefty. And we were doing a TV show, and I said, Yogi, I didn't know you were ambidextrous on the golf course. And he said, I'm not, Ann. I'm amphibious.
Yeah, that's Yogi. That I believe that 100%. You know, I work with a guy named Jim Cott, too. Kitty was a great broadcaster, a great pitcher, and he played right and left-handed, and he could shoot his age both ways. I've never met anybody like him, but he could. When he was in his 70s, he could shoot in his 70s both right and left-handed.
So do you do most things lefty?
No, I'm a natural righty. My father made me a left-handed batter in baseball when I was a kid. He thought I was going to be the next Ted Williams, so he wanted me to pattern myself and my swing after Ted Williams, the great Ted Williams. So that just stuck. And when I went to pick up golf, it just seemed more natural to swing left-handed, to continue left-handed.
Interesting, because, you know, it's harder to get left-handed equipment. I mean, you can get it now more readily than maybe, you know, 20 years ago. But who taught you how to play golf?
Pretty much self-taught. You know, I started reading every book I could find. You know, Ben Hogan's book, watching videos, even Bobby Jones. I go back, you know, to the old day. I read to the beginning, and then You know, just anybody I could see, the Golf Channel, some of your interviews over the years, just listening and watching is amazing. I became addicted to the Golf Channel, obviously, and so many different coaches that you listen. Sometimes you get too many ideas going on in your head, right, with too many different theories. But, you know, it's just kind of self-taught.
So what do you bring from baseball, from pitching, to golf, would you say?
You know, to me, I think it's a sense of creativity, you know, and a sense also of working yourself out of trouble. You know, in baseball, on the mound, often you get yourself in trouble. The base is loaded. It's like hitting the ball in the woods, and you got to go find it and chip it out and try to save score and save par if you can. For me, it's mostly bogey. If I can play bogey golf, I'm happy. But I think it's that sense of never giving up, never getting too down, no matter how bad it's going. Because golf is the most frustrating game, as you know, and can be. And if you let it get to you, and if you don't, if you just take what comes your way, and you have that mentality, then you can still have fun. You go, hey, let me create a shot here. Let me be creative and have some vision here. And it's the same as kind of pitching.
So you see more of a mental comparison, right, then from pitching to golf?
Absolutely, definitely more mental. You know, golf can get in your head, obviously. But also there's the physical nature of golf, and the rhythm and the timing and the tempo is very similar to a pitching motion, to the windup of a pitcher. It's kind of the same sort of a thing. What I used to say is the ball flight doesn't lie. So whenever I'd throw a pitch, I knew exactly what I did wrong by how the ball flew. It's the same thing in golf. You know exactly what you did wrong. You know, by if you slice it or if you hook it, if your arms are out in front of your body or your lower half or the same vice versa, you know, there is a key because the ball flight never lies.
If you're having a bad night on the mound or, you know, a couple bad pitches, you know, in golf, you're only as good as your last shot, right? It's probably the same on the mound. What would you tell yourself when you're on the mound in a baseball game if you knew you could do much better?
Yeah, to me, it was more about just making quick adjustments, staying in the moment. You know, if you get too far ahead of yourself or you're too much, if you get distracted, really, I think distractions kill performance. So if you can just stay in the present, stay in the moment and say, okay, what's the adjustment that needs to be made? How quickly could I make the adjustment? I know what I'm doing wrong, you know, because, you know, I've gone through my checklist and I know exactly where I need to be and what I need to do to get back there. So that's the main focus. You simplify and just get into the moment and just make the quick adjustment as quickly as you can.
Well, you hear golfers saying all the time, just stay in the present. That is so hard to do, to forget that last bad shot and only think of the next shot. So you have good training from baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same thing. Amnesia is a good thing, right? Forget about what just happened, because after the match or after the game, there's plenty of time to beat yourself up. There's plenty of time to go back and really kind of go over every little thing that went wrong. So, but in the moment, it's so counterproductive. It's nothing but a distraction. And sometimes it takes a while. It's not easy. You just need to step back and just gain your perspective again and train yourself mentally to kind of trick your mind into thinking that way. And it's hard to do. You're right. Very difficult to do.
So many similarities. I love talking about the mental aspect of sports, and there are a lot of similarities between pitching and golf. So tell me, who do you follow on the PGA Tour? Who are some of your favorite players?
Well, you know, I obviously some of the new guys are amazing. You know, I'll date myself because, you know, I'm a lefty and I always love to watch Phil Mickelson or Mike Weir, you know, all the lefties, Harmon the lefty, Brian Harmon's great. Anybody that's lefty, I'm kind of prone to because I know, you know, we've been discriminated upon over the years. So there's a little chip on your shoulder if you're a left-handed golfer, and I thrive with that. So, you know, obviously all the lefties, but Scottie Scheffler's amazing. How could you not appreciate what he's doing? Rory is just so fun to watch. They're so powerful. There's so many similarities in baseball, too. There's so much power in baseball now. Power pitching, power hitting. It's the same in golf. You know, they hit the ball so far, and it's changed the game. Changed the nature of golf courses and how you design golf courses nowadays.
Right. Do you know how Phil became a lefty in golf? He would watch his dad practice in the mirror when he was a toddler. He watched his dad swing in the mirror, and that's what it came naturally to him to be lefty.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story. And I know he's a baseball fan and a pitcher, too. You know, he actually has thrown batting practice before. I know I've heard stories about him wanting to be a pitcher, so that kind of endeared him to me even more. So, it's an amazing story how kids learn, you know, and things that almost just by watching, you know, visually learning is more important sometimes than anything else.
Did your parents play golf? Did your dad play? What's your history in the sport?
He did pick it up later in life, you know, like me. But, we weren't exposed to it at a young age. You know, that was the big three sports. It was football, basketball, and baseball, and that was all we had time for. And but then, as I sort of gotten into baseball and then towards the end of my career, I realized what I was missing and how fun it was. And now I regret it because I'm playing catch-up. All those years I could have played when I was active as a baseball player and all the courses I could have gotten on. You know, I hear stories of John Smoltz and Greg Maddux that get on Augusta when they were during their careers, and I'm like, what did I miss here? I'm such a fool. So for the rest of my life, I'm going to be playing catch-up.
So many pitchers would tell me they bring their clubs with them when they traveled because you could play on your off days.
Yes.
You didn't do that.
I didn't do that. You know, and as you know, Ann, I mean, golf is a game that you have to play reasonably well to enjoy. You can't just show up at Augusta and never have played the game before. So it's just not going to work that way. And so you have to take the time, and you have to have perseverance, you know, and get the golf bug and say, I'm going to learn this game, and I'm going to do what I have to do to get good enough to enjoy the game. And that, to me, that was the demarcation point where I now can play anywhere in the world on any golf course, even though I may shoot 94 or 92. I know how to keep moving. I know how to put the ball in my pocket. I know how not to slow anybody down. I know how to play the game. And to me, that's the most important thing that you learn as somebody trying to pick up the game.
Talk to any other pitchers about golf, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz. Roger Clemens is a really good golfer. He plays in a lot of these celebrity tournaments.
All the time. There's always a tip. There's always somebody that has a coach that says do this or do that. So, absolutely. We're always talking about golf. We're talking about equipment because boys love our toys. And, you know, and so there's a new putter out there. Or there's a new driver. There's a new set of irons and the technology that comes into play with that. And you got to have this. You got to try that. It'll help your game. So, yeah, we're obsessed.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to ask you about Keegan Bradley. Ryder Cup's coming up. I know you're going to be knee-deep in baseball season, end of September, but there's a chance that, you know, he may want to pick himself as a captain's pick. I don't know if he'll qualify on points. The top six get in on points, and then it's up to the captain, Keegan, to pick the other six. What do you think? Do you think if he's playing well enough heading into that time of year, which is coming up very soon, should he play? Should he pick himself to be captain and player?
Well, that's really, you know, inside the ropes kind of stuff there. So I don't really feel qualified, you know, to give a really, you know, definitive opinion. But I would say you better be good. You better not be marginal, you know, and say, you know, okay, am I kind of close enough on the edge and then I'll play? You know, if you're Tiger Woods in his prime, then I'll, of course. But it's very hard to manage a team and to coach and all that goes into it and also have the focus to be a player. So that's very difficult. You know, I would, at first blush, I would kind of frown on that, to tell you the truth. But as I said, that's inside the ropes kind of golf thinking, and they know things I don't know, but I would say no.
Would you ever consider managing in the game, baseball?
I kind of like what I'm doing. You know, I'm smart enough to know that that's a hard job and sometimes a thankless job. Certainly there's a shelf life to that job too as well. So you never say never, but, you know, I think that those days are passing me by.
Well, this event is incredible. The David Cone Celebrity Charity Golf Classic, raising money for Ed Lucas Foundation. Bless his heart. I loved Ed Lucas. I really did. Allison does such a great job. I've been coming to this, David, for so long. I hate to even tell you because it will date me for sure, but Phil Rizzuto hosted it, and I was here when he hosted this, and then Gene Michael, and then you. So talk a little bit about the history of this incredible golf charity golf tournament.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. You know, I feel so lucky because I knew all of those guys. I knew Phil Rizzuto. He announced the games that I pitched. I went to this golf tournament too. I've seen you here many times, and when I was just a celebrity playing in this tournament. So, and I saw Gene Michael and what he did to carry on the torch and for Ed Lucas and Allison. So I know the tradition of this tournament. And then when Gene came to me and said, I need some help, can you help me take this over? And Gene wasn't feeling well at the time, and he passed shortly thereafter. So, you know, I felt a real kindred spirit to kind of, you know, this, somebody's got to carry the torch here. And this tournament runs itself. The people behind the scenes do such a wonderful job. And now we have Jersey Mike's as a sponsor, and the sponsorship's really picked up. So it's at an all-time high right now in terms of the participation, and it's all because of the people behind the scenes. The small part for me is just my name. Sure, you can use my name, but you know, they do all the work behind the scenes.
Talk about your day. How'd you play out there today, and some of the other celebrities who've been here?
Yeah, it's so good. Roger Clemens, El Duque, Orlando Hernandez is here. The list goes on and on. My teammates. The thing that's good about this, too, it's not just baseball players. It's football players. There's basketball players here. John Starks is here. There's musicians. There's comedians. There's boxers. I mean, throughout the years, it was all walks of life that have come to this tournament and have supported Ed Lucas and Allison. So it's pretty amazing to be a part of it.
Last question. Your favorite foursome, who would it be? If you could play with anybody on the planet, who would your other three partners be?
Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, I'd pick Phil, you know, because I'm a lefty and I'm biased. I would pick I'd pick Babe Ruth if I could. If we can go back in time, I'd get Babe Ruth in there because he's so fun. I mean, you know, you would have some fun if you're hanging with Babe. I would pick maybe Bill Clinton, you know, just because, you know, he would be fun and have some great stories too as well. And I would probably pick, somebody from like Michael Jordan, maybe, to pick him as well. I'd want a diverse group of people that would have different stories to tell from different walks of life and also be fun-loving.
And I can't let you go until you tell me your most memorable baseball. Five-time World Series champion, five-time All-Star, played for so many teams, Yankees and Mets. Favorite all-time baseball memory?
When we won our first championship with the Yankees in 96, that ticker tape parade coming up the Canyon of Heroes is amazing. There was millions of people as you ride up on a float, right up the center of Manhattan, the Canyon of Heroes, as they say. And when you look to the right, there's walls of people every side street you get. And when you look to the left, there's walls of people, and you can't believe there's that many people. And there's confetti raining down on your head. And then I look up above me, and there's Joe DiMaggio and Yogi Berra and a convertible Thunderbird leading the parade. And it just hit me. This is just a once-in-a-lifetime sort of a moment that not too many people get to experience. Mm-hmm.
David Cone, continued success. And love this charity. Love what you're doing on and off the golf course. So keep it up.
Thank you, Ann. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks so much. Be sure to pick up a copy of my book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. Hatherley Press published it. You can get it at Barnes & Noble or order it online at Amazon.com. I'm really proud of this book. I interviewed 12 legends, 6 men, 6 women, 12 legends in golf, and they all share life lessons and wisdom, what they learned from their iconic golf careers that they use in their day-to-day life. So it's really universal themes for everyone. Whether you're a golfer or not, I think you will really enjoy the messages in this book. And they're positive, uplifting messages. Nothing negative, nothing divisive. This is a real feel-good book. These are messages that you can take with you in anything you do. And whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're young or old, these messages are reminders of what we can do to be better and to motivate ourselves and to live our best lives. My thanks to Jason Birnbaum, David Cone, and Dan Rappaport, and to Mike Goodzone Production. As Marianne Evans, known by her pen name, George Eliot, once said, it is never too late to be what you might have been. Have a great week, and I look forward to talking with you next time right here on Sports Interview with Ann LaGorrie.